You're tuned to listener-sponsored WBAI in New York and WBAI.org with a special report. Senator Dianne Feinstein, chair of the Senate's Intelligence Committee, released a report Tuesday afternoon on the CIA's use of torture during the Bush administration. Here's California's Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein.
Mr. President, this has been a long process. The work began 7 years ago, when Senator Rockefeller directed committee staff to review the CIA cables describing the interrogation sessions of Abu Zubaydah and al-Nashiri. It's been very difficult, but I believe the documentation and the findings and conclusions will make clear how this program was morally, legally, and administratively misguided, and that this nation should never again engage in these tactics. Let me now turn to the contents of the study. As I noted, we have 20 findings and conclusions, which fall into four general categories. First, the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques were not an effective way to gather intelligence information. Second, the CIA provided extensive amounts of inaccurate information about the operation of the program and its effectiveness to the White House, the Department of Justice, Congress, the CIA Inspector General, the media, and the American public. Third, the CIA's management of the program was inadequate and deeply flawed. And fourth, the CIA program was far more brutal than people were led to believe. Let me describe each category in more detail. The first set of findings and conclusions concern the effectiveness, or lack thereof, of the interrogation program. The committee found that the CIA's coercive interrogation techniques were not an effective means of acquiring accurate intelligence or gaining detainee cooperation. The CIA and other defenders of the program have repeatedly claimed that the use of so-called interrogation techniques was necessary to get detainees to provide critical information and to bring detainees to a, quote, state of compliance, end quote, in which they would cooperate and provide information. The study concludes that both claims are inaccurate. The report is very specific in how it evaluates the CIA's claims on the effectiveness and necessity of its enhanced interrogation techniques. Specifically, we use the CIA's own definition of effectiveness as ratified and approved by the Department of Justice's Office of Legal Counsel. The CIA's claims that the EITs were necessary to obtain, quote, otherwise available, end quote, information that could not be obtained from any other source to stop terrorist attacks and save American lives, that's a claim we conclude is inaccurate. We took 20 examples that the CIA itself claimed to show the success of these interrogations. These include cases of terrorist plots stopped or terrorist captured. The CIA used these examples in presentations to the White House, in testimony to Congress, in submissions to the Department of Justice, and ultimately to the American people. Some of the claims are well known. The capture of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the prevention of attacks against the Library Tower of Los Angeles, and the takedown of Osama bin Laden. Other claims were made only in classified settings to the White House, Congress, and Department of Justice. In each case, the CIA claimed that critical and unique information came from one or more detainees in its custody after they were subjected to the CIA's coercive techniques. And that information led to specific counterterrorism success. Our staff reviewed every one of the 20 cases, and not a single case holds up. In every single one of these cases, at least one of the following was true. One, the intelligence community had information separate from the use of EITs that led to the terrorist disruption or capture. Two, information from a detainee subjected to EITs played no role in the claimed disruption or capture. And three, the purported terrorist plot either did not exist or posed no real threat to Americans or United States interests. Some critics have suggested the study concludes that no intelligence was ever provided from any detainee the CIA held. That is false, and the study makes no such claim. What is true is that actionable intelligence that was, quote, otherwise unavailable, was not obtained using these coercive interrogation techniques. The report also chronicles where the use of interrogation techniques that do not involve physical force were effective. Specifically, the report provides examples where interrogators had sufficient information to confront detainees with facts, know when they were lying, and when they apply and where they applied rapport building techniques that were developed and honed by the United States military, the FBI, and more recently, the interagency high-value detainee interrogation group called the HEG, that these techniques produced good intelligence. Let me make a couple of additional comments on the claimed effectiveness of CIA interrogations. At no time did the CIA's coercive interrogation techniques lead to the collection of intelligence on an imminent threat that many believe was the justification for the use of these techniques. The committee never found an example of this hypothetical ticking time bomb scenario. The use of coercive technique methods regularly resulted in fabricated information. Sometimes the CIA actually knew detainees were lying. Other times, the CIA acted on false information, diverting resources and leading officers or contractors to falsely believe they were acquiring unique or actionable intelligence and that its interrogations were working when they were not. Internally, CIA officers often called into question the effectiveness of the CIA's interrogation techniques, noting how the techniques failed to elicit detainee cooperation or produce accurate information. The report includes numerous examples of CIA officers questioning the agency's claims, but these contradictions were marginalized and not presented externally. The second set of findings and conclusions is that the CIA provided extensive inaccurate information about the program and its effectiveness to the White House, the Department of Justice, Congress, the CIA Inspector General, the media, and the American public. This conclusion is somewhat personal for me. I remember clearly when Director Hayden briefed the Intelligence Committee for the first time on the so-called EITs at that September 2006 committee meeting. He referred specifically to a, quote, tummy slap, end quote, among other techniques, and presented the entire set of techniques as minimally harmful and implied in a highly clinical and professional manner. They were not. The committee's report demonstrates that these techniques were physically very harmful and that the constraints that existed on paper in Washington did not match the way techniques were used at CIA sites around the world. A particular note was the treatment of Abu Zubaydah over a span of 17 days in August of 2002. This involved nonstop interrogation and abuse, 24/7, from August 4th to August 21st, and included multiple forms of deprivation and physical assault. The description of this period, first written up by our staff in early 2009, while Senator Rockefeller was chairman, is what prompted this full review. But the inaccurate and incomplete descriptions go far beyond that. The CIA provided inaccurate memoranda and explanations to the Department of Justice while its legal counsel was considering the legality of the coercive techniques. In those communications to the Department of Justice, the CIA claimed the following: the coercive techniques would not be used with excessive repetition. Detainees would always have an opportunity to provide information prior to the use of the techniques. The techniques were to be used in progression, starting with the least aggressive and proceeding only if needed. Medical personnel would make sure that interrogations wouldn't cause serious harm, and they could intervene at any time to stop interrogations. Interrogators were carefully vetted and highly trained. And each technique was to be used in a specific way without deviation and only with specific approval for the interrogator and detainee involved. None of these assurances, which the Department of Justice relied on to form its legal opinions, were consistently or even routinely carried out. In many cases, important information was withheld from policymakers. For example, Foreign Intelligence Committee Chairman Bob Graham asked a number of questions after he was first briefed in September of 2002, but the CIA refused to answer him, effectively stonewalling him until he left the committee at the end of the year. In another example, the CIA, in coordination with White House officials and staff, initially withheld information of the CIA's interrogation techniques from Secretary of State Colin Powell and Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. There are CIA records stating that Colin Powell wasn't told about the program at first because there were concerns that, and I quote, Powell would blow his stack if he were briefed. Source, email from John Rizzo, dated July 31, 2003. CIA records clearly indicate, and definitively, that after he was briefed on the CIA's first detainee, Abu Zubaydah, the CIA didn't tell President Bush about the full nature of the EITs until April 2006. That's what the records indicate. The CIA similarly withheld information or provided false information to the CIA Inspector General during his conduct of a special review by the IG in 2004. Incomplete and inaccurate information from the CIA was used in documents provided to the Department of Justice and as a basis for President Bush's speech on September 6, 2006, in which he publicly acknowledged the CIA program for the first time. In all of these cases, other CIA officers acknowledged internally that information the CIA had provided was wrong. The CIA also misled other CIA White House officials. When Vice President Cheney's counsel, David Addington, asked CIA Counsel General Scott Mueller in 2003 about the CIA's videotaping the waterboarding of detainees, Mueller deliberately told him that videotapes, quote, were not being made, end quote, but did not disclose that videotapes of previous waterboarding sessions had been made and still existed. Source, email from Scott Mueller, dated June 7, 2003.
You're listening to WBAI in New York. Senator Dianne Feinstein detailing the Senate Intelligence Committee report on the CIA's interrogation and detention techniques.
There are many, many more examples in the committee's report. All are documented. The third set of findings and conclusion notes the various ways in which CIA management of the detention and interrogation program from its inception to its formal termination in January of 2009 was inadequate and deeply flawed. There is no doubt that the detention and interrogation program was by any major measure a major CIA undertaking. It raised significant legal and policy issues and involved significant resources and funding. It was not, however, managed as a significant CIA program. Instead, it had limited oversight and lacked formal direction and management. For example, in the 6 months between being granted detention authority and taking custody of its first detainee, Abu Zubaydah, the CIA had not identified and prepared a suitable detention site. It had not researched effective interrogation techniques or developed a legal basis for the use of interrogation techniques outside of the rapport building techniques that were official CIA policy until that time. In fact, there is no indication the CIA reviewed its own history. That's just what Helgerson was saying in 2005, with coercive interrogation tactics. As the executive summary notes, the CIA had engaged in rough interrogation in the past. In fact, the CIA had previously sent a letter to the Intelligence Committee in 1989, and here is the quote, that inhumane physical or psychological techniques are counterproductive because they do not produce intelligence and will probably result in false answers, end quote. That was a letter from John Helgerson, CIA Director of Congressional Affairs, dated January 8, 1989. However, in late 2001 and 2, rather than research interrogation practices and coordinate with other parts of the government with extensive expertise in detention and interrogation of terrorist attacks, the CIA engaged two contract psychologists who had never conducted interrogations themselves or ever operated detention facilities. As the CIA captured or received custody of detainees through 2002, it maintained separate lines of management at headquarters for different detention facilities. No individual or office was in charge of the detention and interrogation program until January of 2003, by which point more than one-third of CIA detainees identified in our review had been detained and interrogated. One clear example of flawed CIA management was the poorly managed detention facility referred to in our report by the code name Cobalt to hide the actual name of the facility. It began operations in September of 2002. The facility knew few formal records of the detainees, the facility kept few formal records of the detainees housed there, and untrained CIA officers conducted frequent, unauthorized, and unsupervised interrogations using techniques that were not and never became part of the CIA's formal enhanced interrogation program. The CIA placed a junior officer with no relevant experience in charge of the site. In November 2002, an otherwise healthy detainee who was being held mostly nude and chained to a concrete floor died at the facility from what is believed to have been hypothermia. In interviews conducted in 2003 by the CIA Officer of the Inspector General, CIA's leadership acknowledged that they had little or no awareness of operations at this specific CIA detention site. And some CIA officials, senior officials, believed erroneously that enhanced interrogation techniques were not used there. The CIA, in its June 2013 response to the committee's report, agreed that there were management failures in the program, but asserted that they were corrected by early 2003. While the study found that management failures improved somewhat, we found they persisted till the end of the program. Among the numerous management shortcomings identified in the report are the following. The CIA used poorly trained and non-vetted personnel. Individuals were deployed, in particular interrogators, without relevant training or experience. Due to the CIA's redactions to the report, there are limits to what I can say in this regard, but it's a clear fact that the CIA deployed officers who had histories of personal, ethical, and professional problems of a serious nature. These included histories of violence and abusive treatment of others, and should have called into question their employment with the United States government, let alone their suitability to participate in a sensitive CIA covert action program. The two contractors that CIA allowed to develop, operate, and assess its interrogation operations conducted numerous inherently governmental functions that never should have been outsourced to contractors. These contractors are referred in the report in special pseudonyms, Swigert and Dunbar. They developed the list of so-called enhanced interrogation techniques that the CIA employed. They personally conducted interrogations of some of the CIA's most significant detainees, using the techniques, including the waterboarding of Abu Zubaydah, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and al-Nashiri. The contractors provided the official evaluations of whether detainees' psychological states allowed for the continued use of the enhanced techniques. Even for some detainees, they themselves were interrogating or had interrogated. Evaluating the psychological state of the very detainees they were interrogating is a clear conflict of interest and a violation of professional guidelines. The CIA relied on these two contractors to evaluate the interrogation program they had devised and in which they had obvious financial interests. Again, a clear conflict of interest and an avoidance of responsibility by the CIA. In 2005, the two contractors formed a company specifically for the purpose of expanding their work with the CIA. From 05 to 08, the CIA outsourced almost all aspects of its detention and interrogation program to this country as part of a contract valued at more than $180 million. Ultimately, not all contract options were exercised. However, the CIA has paid these two contractors and their company more than $80 million. Of the 119 individuals found to have been detained by the CIA during the life of the program, the committee found that at least 26 were wrongfully held. These are cases where the CIA itself determined that it had not met the standard for detention set out in the 2001 Memorandum of Notification, which governs a covert action. Detainees often remained in custody for months after the CIA determined they should have been released. CIA records provide insufficient information to justify the detention of many other detainees. Due to poor record keeping a full accounting of how many specific detainees were held, and how they were specifically treated while in custody may never be known. Similarly, in specific instances, we found that enhanced interrogation techniques were used without authorization in a manner far different and more brutal than had been authorized by the Office of Legal Counsel and conducted by personnel not approved to use them on detainees. Questions about how and when to apply interrogation techniques were ad hoc and not proposed, evaluated, and approved in the manner described by the CIA in written descriptions and testimony about the program. Detainees were often subject to harsh and brutal interrogation and treatment because CIA analysts believe, often in error, that they knew more information than what they had provided. Sometimes CIA managers and interrogators in the field were uncomfortable with what they were being asked to do and recommended ending the abuse of a detainee. Repeatedly, in such cases, they were overruled by people at CIA headquarters who thought they knew better, such as by analysts with no line authority. This shows again how a relatively small number of CIA personnel, perhaps 40 to 50, were making decisions on detention and interrogation, despite the better judgments of other CIA officers.
You've been listening to Senator Dianne Feinstein on the Senate Intelligence Committee's report on CIA interrogation and detention. It's the first public accounting of the CIA's brutal handling of prisoners. You can see the entire report by going to Dianne Feinstein's website or going to our website, wbai.org.